Morning again. Morning. Luke 22, if you would be so kind to take a look there with me, beginning with verse 41 today. I'll just remind you a little of the context. Jesus has just left the Last Supper with his disciples, headed out to the Mount of Olives, encouraged his disciples to pray for themselves that they might not enter into temptation. And then we get to verse 41, where it says, "He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed. And this was his prayer: Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. 'Why are you sleeping?' he asked them. 'Get up and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation.'" So where did Jesus go after giving them instructions to pray about their own experience of temptation? Where did he go? A stone's throw, as it says, away. And what did he do there, Ken? He prayed some more. He knelt and prayed. In this context, what would you expect him to be praying about, based on what he just told the disciples to pray about? Lena? Oh, I suppose he could have. Right? Anyone else? What would you expect him to be praying about in light of what he just said to his disciples? You might expect him to be praying for the disciples. Yeah. Although, if we read down a little further, does he pray about the disciples? No. He prays for himself, like he had advised the disciples to do for themselves. He prays for himself. How many of you would be comfortable assuming that Jesus is now going to model for us how to do what he just told the disciples to do? Did you follow that? He just told the disciples, "Watch and pray so that you don't enter into temptation." And then he goes off, I would suggest, to watch and pray so that he does not enter into temptation. Because he's about to go through the worst trial of his life, just like they're about to go through, at least so far, the worst trial of their lives. So why go a stone's throw away? What do you mean by privacy? What's the advantage of privacy under the circumstances? Hold on just a second. All right. All right. Excellent. Were you going to add something else to that? All right. Good. He wasn't so far away that they couldn't see and hear what was going on. Ellen White actually comments in Desire of Ages that one possible reason is to spare them observing the depths of the agony that he was going to go through to some degree. But, you know, it was only a little ways away. They observed him sweating blood or whatever, unless he explained that to them after the fact, which I thought about as a possibility last time, because they were sleeping through most of this. They may have woken and observed some of it and then gone back to sleep. Depends, I suppose, how long Jesus prayed as to whether they may have observed some of it and then, as he continued, they nodded off. Jesus often went off by himself to pray, didn't he? And anyone think of any other examples of when Jesus did that? Yeah, there's maybe two or three stories that might fit, but I think that's Mark 1 or 2, right at the beginning of the book of Mark. It says he went out early in the morning, and the disciples were searching all over for him. And he, you know, once they found him, he got up and then went on and did more teaching and preaching and healing. But yes, he seems to have done it to get away from the crowds. The other time I'm thinking of is the feeding of the 5,000. After that whole miracle and everything, he sent the crowds away, and he sent the disciples away, and he went up by himself on the mountainside to pray. What would be the advantage of that for Jesus? Why does he want privacy? Why does he want to get away from the crowds to pray? And while he was with people, this is the corollary to what you're saying, he was giving. He was, when the woman came up and touched the hem of his garment, he says, I felt virtue go out of me. You know, I felt the power go out of me. And so while he was with his disciples, he was constantly focused on them. He was giving to them. And the only way, it seems, that he could focus on praying for himself, that he could focus on his connection with his Father, was to get by himself so there weren't people immediately around to whom he needed to be ministering and giving. So I think that's the advantage of privacy. I know for myself that I want privacy when I'm praying to my Heavenly Father, because if there are other people around, I'm distracted. You know, even if it's okay, right? You can watch me, you can listen, and how do you ignore them? You know, it's how do you have a one-on-one conversation with someone else standing there listening in? And it's not necessarily that I have anything secret that I don't want other people to hear, but it's just hard to focus when there are people there watching, listening, distracting you. I've talked to people who tell me, oh, I always pray while I'm driving. And I don't want to discourage you from praying while you're driving. Please do. I wish more people were praying while they were driving. Maybe not texting while they were driving, but praying while they were driving. But I have a hard time seeing how one could consistently build intimacy with all of the other things pulling your attention, you know, while you're, at least I hope, other things are pulling your attention while you're driving. Karina and I have had quite a few meaningful conversations while we were driving. And you can do a lot of interacting while you're driving. But that was usually only because that was the only time we had. And if you really want to have a meaningful conversation, if you really need to deal with some difficult issues, I would much rather sit down someplace, you know, quietly, one-on-one, to have that conversation than try to do it while I'm doing something else. So, lesson number one. If you're going to pray, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. If you're going to pray, Lord, spare me from this trial, get some time and space alone with God, so you can focus, so you can listen. Distractions are not your friend. And if the disciples had been able to pray and focus and be one-on-one with God, maybe they would have heard some things that could have prepared them for what was coming. This is also a great lesson for relating to the people you love here. Take time alone with them, one-on-one. I have heard many times the story of Karina's dad at a period in their family's life when he felt like he was losing touch with his kids, like they thought perhaps that he put his job ahead of them, that he deliberately began taking them out individually to dinner or, you know, to a meal, to spend one-on-one time with them, to have those conversations, to say, you know, is there anything that you need to tell me, that I need to know about how I've treated you? Is there anything I need to apologize for? That's not something that could have been done in a crowd. It needed one-on-one time to do. There's no substitute for time alone together with your spouse or your kids, your loved ones. So back to Jesus' prayer. What were the two main parts of his prayer? And we've looked at this previously when we looked at this in Matthew. But that's been several years ago now, and the review isn't going to hurt anybody. Besides, I see a lot of different faces than when we did that last. So what were the two main parts of Jesus' prayer? Ken, go ahead. All right. Excellent way of putting it. His request, which was, Father, let this, I don't want to go through with this. Right? And his submission, which was expressed with, nevertheless, not what I want, but what you want. I'm going to put my own labels on those two parts. He asked for what he wanted, but he gave his father permission to say no. He asked for what he wanted, but he gave his father permission to say no, to not give him what he wanted. Why are both of those elements necessary in a prayer to be spared temptation? Maybe you need to think about that for a minute and talk to the person next to you. Temptation is a broad word that can mean everything from temptation to sin to trials, tests. The root word is an experiment. Because we're in this world, yeah, and Jesus came for this specific test, this experiment that he was part of. And he says, could I bypass this part of the experiment, please? Pardon? Yeah, can we move on to the next bit? But why are both of those elements? He asked for what he wanted, but he gave the Father permission to say no to him. Take just a moment with the person next to you. Why are both of those elements important in a prayer to be spared a trial, a test, temptation? And don't just hold on a second. Give people a chance to talk with each other if they will, and then we'll hear from a couple of you. So who's got an insight to share as you've discussed with your friends and enemies? Elena has something?
I'm thinking about how he loves the people. He wants to save his people. And he wants to save his people.
Yeah. Excellent insight into the conflict really that's within Jesus himself. He wants to go through with the cross. But he doesn't look forward to it. It isn't going to feel good. Yeah, excellent. Why both elements? Yes, Betty Lou.
I would like to see that the pain is gone.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Okay.
And then you had your insights?
Yeah, to me, we don't always think about it, but he was human as well as divine. And this was his humanity that was speaking. In his humanity, he just could not, he just did not want to go through it. If there's any way.
I can't imagine that his divinity was looking forward to it either. Not that I'm diminishing, you know, the human experience of it, But it's not just that his humanity recoiled from this. His divinity had shared all eternity with the Father too. Yeah. But why both elements is what I'm most curious about now. Did you guys have more that you wanted to specifically say about why both elements are important in a prayer like this? Mm-hmm. And that was an option, you know. Even past this point, you know, he says, "Don't you know the Father would send me 12 legions of angels?" But then he could have come and just prayed the latter half of the prayer. Lord, I'm willing to do whatever you want. So why the first half of the prayer too? Why is it important to express that? If I'm correct that Jesus is modeling for us how to pray that we may not enter into temptation, why doesn't he just say, look, just submit yourself to the will of God? Why does he even model for us asking for what we want in that situation? Excellent. All right. Daryl, you going to add to that? Very good. Have you ever been around somebody who, when you ask them, what do you want to do? They said, I don't know, whatever you want to do. How long can you put up with that? How long can you stand that? Why? They're so agreeable. They're so nice. They'll do whatever you want. Why does that bug you? Well, you can. You just have to make all the decisions yourself. But well, I could still just say, I'm so glad you agree with me about everything. And we'll just, why does it bug us? Thank you. Yes. If I just wanted someone who would agree with me all the time, I would just carry a mirror around. Right? When I go to the hardware store to pick out lighting, I take my wife with me. Not because I expect her to say, yeah, whatever you want is fine. I expect her to say, I didn't like that one. And I like this one. And here's why. Because I think that her opinion matters, makes sense. And we may not get the one that she wants the most. It may be too expensive. It may be any number of things. But I expect to come out of the hardware store with a better outcome because the two of us discussed it together than if I went by myself and just got whatever I wanted. And it drives us nuts when people will not be honest with us and tell us what they want. Someone was commenting over in Surprise Valley, I have this friend, right? Someone that I've known for 13 years. And whenever I try to ask them questions, and I don't know if it's a, I think she said it was a lady, you know, whenever I ask her questions, she turns the question back around on me and never gives me an answer. And she said, after 13 years, I still don't know the woman. I don't know what she likes and doesn't. I know hardly anything about her. I don't know. How do you have a relationship with someone under those circumstances? You can't have a relationship with them. You can only have a relationship with the imaginary person that they've laid out in front of you that they want you to believe is them, perhaps. But you don't have a relationship with them because they won't even tell you who they are. So both parts of the prayer are important if you're going to have a real connection. And I guess I would suggest that that gives us some idea of what this prayer is really about. Yes. Absolutely. And we're shackled if the other person won't tell us what they want. Yeah. So were you going to add to that?
Well, yeah, if you're not a real person, if you don't really have, you know, if you're just trying to deal with the other person you want, because you haven't shared your feelings or whatever, and when the trial or temptation comes, you can be easy to become resentful or angry, you know. I didn't want this in the first place. Yeah, I just said that. Well, because, you know, I thought it was too hard. Yeah, yeah. But I really didn't want it. And now it's come on.
Very good.
So, if you've been having
I see, catching
first, this. And you've laid that out there, then you felt like I've been hurt, now it's easier to endure something.
Yeah,
if
excellent.
You feel like you've been hurt, then you can hear somebody else.
Then you know whatever decision, if in this case you're letting the other person make the decision, that they've taken into account who you are and what you wanted. Yeah. Elena, were you going to add something? Yeah. If someone won't answer you, you begin to question their basic honesty or whether they want to be with you. And really, at some level, they don't want to be with you. They want to pretend to be somebody else and be with you, but they themselves are not present. Irma? He makes life good for her. Yeah. Very good. He wouldn't have been happy with that outcome either. No.
I mean, he had gotten it right then, true.
Yeah.
He would have been spared, you know, 3 days of incredible horror that, you know, we don't even understand. But ultimately,
yeah. Which I'm going to take a step back and then say, so when we're praying to be spared from temptation, really, it's the goal of that prayer is not to escape from whatever trial is directly in front of us, because there may be a bigger picture that we don't see, and we realize to go through this is the only way to get to where I really want to be. And so, Father, if you see that the only way to get where I really want to go is to go through this, then take me through it. And so the prayer is more about, Father, like the lady on the bus that we talked about last time, whose only thought was, Lord, please don't let me dishonor you in the way I die. Right? She knew she was going to be slaughtered. And her only concern was, let me hold firm to you. Let me be connected to you. Let me be right with you in the way that I go through this experience. And that's what Jesus was after here. More than being spared the temptation that he was going through, he was saying, let me be connected to you, Father, as I go through whatever it is. But in order to be connected with the Father, he had to be honest. He had to be present himself. He couldn't fake it. He couldn't be somebody else. He couldn't act like this was not a problem. He had to be present himself and real and honest in order to be connected with his Father through the trial. Elena, you had a lot of things to say. What else did you have to say?
Me, that was which
Yes, but he could have just gone back to his father without going through the cross. Exactly, you're understanding it. So he wanted both to go back to heaven with his father and to save you and me. That's right. That's right. Go ahead. Tell me more. What do you mean? She said, you wonder if he'd only prayed half the prayer if it would have... Would the cross have been... Yeah.
Would it have been enough?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
If two people agree on everything, you know the rest of the sentence? That's right. One of them is irrelevant. Well, okay. So, it's necessary to have the second part of the prayer, to give God permission to say no to me, for exactly the same reason. God needs to be able to be real too. He needs to be able to have his point of view also. He needs to be able to do what he thinks is best. Just like I need to be able to say what I think is best. If God always gives me everything I want, right? You following me? If I pray and I get what I want, why have him? You could just make me God and be done. Couldn't you? I mean, if he just gives me what I want, then I'm actually in charge and he just says yes to whatever I say. Do you like this lamp? Yes, whatever you want is fine. I take God to the hardware store because I expect in the conversation that we have together that we're going to come out with a better solution than what I thought of. Are you following me? If God doesn't add some additional wisdom, insight, safety, or creativity to my vision of how the universe ought to be, then he should be fired. So I don't want God just to say yes to everything that I request. He ought to be able to see a bigger picture and know when he should say no to things that I request. One of the stories, and I didn't make a note of the reference because I wasn't planning on telling it, but again, a story from Ellen White's life. She was invited to the deathbed of a sick person. And she prayed in faith, you know, be healed. And the guy got up and was healed. And then he went back to his lifestyle, which had been destroying his life before, and, you know, repeated the same events. And she said, God, why? You know, I prayed that this guy would be healed, and now he's used his life to hurt more people and to do more damage to himself than if he had just died in the first place. And the answer came back from God, well, when you were standing there by the bed, you didn't give me the option. You just said, you know, in the name of the Lord Jesus, be healed. What was I going to do? Not heal him? And then destroy my credibility and your credibility? And she said, after that, I never prayed that way anymore. I realized it was presumptuous, and I would always pray, Father, if it's your will, heal this person. Because God may see a bigger picture reason why that person shouldn't be healed, why it wouldn't be beneficial to them or to other people. And of course, we can think of stories from the Bible, Hezekiah, who got the answer to his prayer, but wished later that he hadn't. And many other people wished later that he hadn't. God should be able to do better for us than we know how to ask for. And by praying that his will be done, we are opening that door to him to give us better than what we can see and what we think is the solution to any given problem. So both parts are necessary. We've got to be honest with God, or we're not connected with him. But neither can we hold him hostage and say, you've got to do it my way or I won't believe in you anymore. Because then we're not connected to him either. Then we're saying, I'm God, and you serve me. This is not to say that everything that happens, happens because God wanted it to. Right? And we've been over this quite a few times recently. This was what our interesting conversation got into over in Surprise Valley this morning. Right? In this situation, I believe it was God's will that Jesus go through the cross. But that's, how do I put it? That's already a reaction to some choices that God did not make. It was not God's will for sin to come into this world in the first place or the universe. He didn't plan that. He didn't want that to happen. I believe he knew it would happen, and I don't know how those things reconcile, right? That God knows the future, but therefore, but it doesn't follow, therefore, that he wrote the script and that everybody who does what he knew would happen was just reading the script and therefore they're not responsible. God clearly says that we're responsible for the decisions we make. So I believe it was God's will that was done here with Jesus, but it was not his perfect will, as some have described it. It was his accommodating will. It was the best that God could do under the circumstances for the salvation of the human race and the restoration of the universe. So when you pray, I just want to make this plain, you know, to avoid some horrible experience, and you pray, Lord, your will be done, and the horrible experience happens to you anyway, it does not automatically follow that it was God's will that that happened to you. Are you with me? When the little girl prays that God's will be done, and her abuser finds her again, it does not mean that that was God's will for that to happen. We might need to give some other people a chance to share. You might have to share some of them with me afterward.
I just remember one.
Okay, you can tell me the one.
That reminds me of this one when Peter needs to know about the future.
Yes, and he told Peter what he was going to do before he did it. Yeah, but Peter still did it, even though he was warned, and he still felt horrible and bad about it, didn't he? Yeah, because he knew it. It was still his choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That's why he checked with Peter again about that. Yes, Betty Lou. Interesting. It needs to be, give us our girl, but thy will be done, and not the other way around. So, lesson number one was get alone with God. Lesson number two is include both parts of the prayer. Ask for what you want, be honest with God, but give him permission to say no to you. If you're holding God hostage, if you don't give me the answer I want, I won't believe in you anymore. You already don't believe in him. You believe in a cosmic vending machine. This is also a basic principle of human relationships. Right? And we already alluded to that some. Ask for what you want, but give the other person the freedom to disagree with you, to say no to you, to express what they want. You may know exactly how someone else should handle their life, but if they make the right decision because they're afraid you won't approve of them, sooner or later you aren't going to be there to disapprove of them, and they'll jump at the opportunity to make that bad decision just because they can. Wise parents don't get into power struggles with their kids, and I say this to myself because I struggle with this, Instead of giving orders that kids feel duty-bound to resist, wise parents say, I'd really appreciate it if you would do X, Y, Z. If you say, you need to do this right now, then the kid not only has to do what you told them to do, but they're disobeying you if they don't, and you know it's this big power struggle. But if you say, I'd really appreciate it if you do X, Y, and Z, they can say, well, can I do that after I finish A, B, and C? And that may be a perfectly reasonable response that I hadn't thought of. And it saves a lot of the power struggle. So what is the good news about unanswered prayer? Or a prayer that's answered negatively? Ken? Yeah. Plainly, sometimes God sees a bigger picture, and if he says no to what we ask for, it's better for us. And we would want that if we could just see it. Excellent. What else is the good news about unanswered prayer? Lena, do you have some good news? Okay. And did it help you be friends? Yeah.
It helped us have our cupcakes
too. Yeah. You got the right idea. And it's okay to say what you want, but how wise it is to be flexible in relationships. So what else is the good news about unanswered prayer? Or when God says no. Yeah. And that was basically what Ken said. Anything else? Yes. Tell me more what you mean. Like, if I always got what I wanted, how would that keep me from trusting, and how does not getting what I want help me trust more? Help me understand a little more what you mean by that. Okay. So having been through... Okay. Yeah, when I experience God saying no to me and then me realizing that was the best thing for me, then that builds my trust. All right? Excellent. How many of you had parents who said no to you? And did you come to recognize the wisdom of some of those no's, at least, in time? All right? And you appreciated that discipline, you know, we would call it. That absolutely is a valuable part of building a trusting relationship. Yeah. And you turn, in some cases, to that parent who was wise enough to say no to you to get help, you know, to get advice. Or you turn to God for a solution when you can't see any solution because he has proven his kindness and his wisdom in the past. Yeah. One of the things that occurred to me is the good news about God saying no is... it means that God wants a real relationship with me. You know, what am I? Animated mud. But God cares what I want and cares what I think. And he wants me to ask for what I want. He wants me to say what I want. And he wants to be real with me and say what he wants in return. We have this negotiation, if you will. We have this conversation. Of all the wild and crazy things, you know, creatures that God spoke into existence, that he made, that he could snuff out that, you know, if he forgot us, we would disappear. And he wants that kind of, really, what it is loving interaction. He wants us to be able to be loved by him and to love him in return. And the fact that he's not just a machine. He doesn't just say always yes. He doesn't just say always no. That there's this interaction between us. And sometimes we convince him, and sometimes he convinces us. And he wants us to carry on this conversation through it all. It is powerful to me. Anyone else? What else is good news about the no's in prayer? Daryl? Go on.
How would you reconcile that with God who loves and cares and understands and will deliver his people when they pray to the difference of those times? I'm not trying to express that. I'm just asking an honest question.
It's a very good question. Go ahead, Joy. They're cured.
But she said, the Lord has not done that with me. And my answer to her, whether it was right or wrong, I don't know, but my answer to her was, the Lord knows that this victory can be yours, and just think of the character that you will build in the overcoming, then if you just take it. Now, that might be really simple to get not the right answer. And she said, well, Joy, I just want it easy. I said, no, we don't want it. We always want it gone. But it at least in my experience, that sometimes we have to struggle with things that God can do.
How does Jesus' situation here apply to the question you've asked? Did God want Jesus to go through with this in the bigger, you know, we say his will was done in this situation, but it was his imperfect will, it was his accommodating will that Jesus should go through the cross. But ultimately, that wasn't God's desire for him. So what can we learn from the fact that God said no to Jesus here and that he had to go through this experience to the How can we apply that to the question you're asking?
The only answer I can come up with, my grace is.
Watchman, go ahead, were you going to say more? We can back up to what I was saying earlier, that the whole point of this prayer is not to escape from the temptation. Although we would like that, and God would love to give that to us, and many times he can, and we just didn't pray for it, and you know we've been down that road. But the big point of this prayer is to be connected, perhaps even in the midst of our failures. Watchman Nee, in his book, The Spiritual Man, actually goes so far as to say that sometimes, for our good, God does not give us the victory over sins that are obvious to us, because if He did, we would become self-satisfied while completely ignoring sins that are much more abhorrent to God, much more of a problem, but are just not in our awareness at the present time. And so the one really obvious, blatant thing that's driving us nuts that we want to go away, we're praying about constantly, and it keeps us praying and connected with God while we're failing and praying and failing and praying. And God doesn't snap His fingers and cure us of that, because He's after some roots that are down deeper and some other issues that we're not even aware of. And given time in that painful struggle, sometimes He can then get to those deeper issues. Now, you know, does He have a word from the Lord? I don't know. You know, he's a writer who's writing out of his own experience and describing from what he sees in Scripture. But I think that's harmonious with my understanding of God, who wants to cure me and heal me from the inside out, and not just put a Band-Aid over the outside, and then something inside festers and will make me sicker and maybe cause me to lose my salvation because I felt good about myself because I've overcome that. What's the matter with all the rest of you? I agree. Absolutely. But let's make it plain that the limiting factor there is me and not God, right? It's not that God could have snapped His fingers and, you know, the victory is available, and I haven't got straight in my experience, whatever it is, how to take hold of that. And sometimes God spares people, you know, He takes away the desire, He, you know, whatever it is. And we don't have to learn whatever that hard lesson is about how to receive that power. He just, boom, there it is. And it wasn't a difficulty. But in many cases, He doesn't. And you're right. It's never an excuse. It's never, well, God hasn't given me the victory over that yet, so therefore I'm going to continue doing it. I believe at every point there's the opportunity to get it and to take hold. But I do think that God sometimes miraculously makes it easy for people, and sometimes He doesn't. And sometimes He doesn't because there is something for us to learn in that struggle that we aren't going to get any other way. And if He cured it easily for us, it might be detrimental to our spiritual health in the long run. That is at least a possibility. And it helps me step back and say, okay, I'm not blaming God that this problem hasn't gone away yet. I'm still the limiting factor. But I'm also not going to complain because other people don't have this struggle still, and God seems to have miraculously cured them. And you know, I trust that He has my best interest at heart in my journey. I don't have better answers, and I don't know if those are totally satisfactory answers, but I identify with what you've described very much, and you know, have experienced that, and have had to try to come to terms in some ways with some of what is going on there. Yeah, Karina. Say that again. This is what Irma was saying earlier. All right. Continue to trust is evidence. It's evidence that people actually love God.
That they want a relationship with God and they don't. It's not that
you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Yeah.
All right. The benefit
our immediate comfort.
The
glory of God, yeah. Right. Morris Vinden uses the concept of an honor guard. Yeah, where he says that the people who've been through horrible trials and didn't get what they wanted, at the final judgment, when some are standing on the walls of the city and some are outside the city, and those outside the city say, God, this isn't fair. You didn't give me opportunities. You didn't, God will call up someone who, was born in the inner city and had no family life and no opportunities and no advantages, but who still turned out of the grace and mercy of God to him. And all those accusations that God was unfair will be laid to rest by people who experienced the unfairness of this life but continued to trust in God. Yeah. Yeah.
For some reason, I don't always get what people are trying to describe this man. Think about what actually happened to him and what he went through.
Yeah.
That whole chapter.
And it was all about this issue.
Yeah. And how many times did he sit and pray, why did you do this on me?
Yeah. The answer to my prayer would be that I could be a stillborn child. Yeah.
Exactly. In my mother's womb. And he had it all. He lost everything.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that he had all the boils and something physical. So, I guess, and the Lord never left him.
No.
But the trials were allowed, and there was a reason for that.
Which touches on one more thing. God doesn't just say no to Jesus. What does he do? How did he deliver the answer? Because, what was the answer to Jesus' request? Yeah, but what was the angel's message? No. And what else did the angel deliver? Strength for? To go through. So God doesn't just say no to us when he says no. He says no with the power to endure and make it through the trial without dishonoring him. All right? Like our friend Norma that we heard about. Her concern was, Lord, let me not dishonor you. God will see to it that you don't need to dishonor him as you go through the trial. He'll give you the strength to make it through. Yes, Irma. Yeah, and going back even to that comment that, you pray that God's will be done, doesn't mean that what happens to you is necessarily his will. Because, I'm praying that I'll win the football game, and the people on the other side are praying that they'll win the football game, and whose prayer does God answer? Right? Or I'm praying that the robber will not come to my house, and the robber's not praying, but he's been given freedom of choice, and he decides to come to my house. If God just stops him every time because I prayed, then he wasn't actually free to rob people, to be evil, to choose against God if he wanted to. So you're right. There's a whole set of bigger picture issues involved. And what I hear you saying, adding to that, is sometimes our experience of going through a trial and how we handle it ends up maybe being a blessing for generations to come, like in the case of Job. insights that we gain from that story, with difficulty, but insights that we gain from that story that help us understand how God works in the world. One final thing, or maybe it's two. God doesn't just say no when I want to be free from suffering. He said no to Jesus, and Jesus agreed. When Jesus wanted to be free from suffering, because saying yes to Jesus would have meant the ultimate no to me. So the reality is, I already have the one yes that I need. But it took God saying no to someone else to provide it. Even if every other prayer I ever pray is answered no, because God said no to Jesus, all things are yes in Him. His grace is sufficient for me. Though the struggle with that temptation never goes away, His grace is sufficient. Though I don't get well, His grace is sufficient. Though I lose the one I love, or never gain the one I want in my family, His yes is sufficient for me. So here's our summary. How to pray for yourself, how to get real, how to stay connected through whatever. Get alone with God. Ask Him for what you want and give Him permission to say no. It's also the recipe for how to be a good friend. Take one-on-one time with your friend. Be real. Be honest. Say what you want. Say what you think. And let your friend be real too. I encourage you to think a little for yourself about the personal implications for your relationship with God. Or maybe there's a human relationship that would be improved by practicing some of these things.